I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
You missed a key thing that happened too. That's a big part of the day. They ran out of sushi.
Oh, the sushi.
They ran out of sushi.
The sushi, the Mune.
The push pops.
Push pops sushi. Yes. Was gone by the fourth inning.
By the fourth inning.
I thought you were a bacala man, Uncle June. What are you doing eating sushi?
You know it's your day when they run out of your sushi by the fourth inning.
But you can eat it while you walk around.
That's the idea.
They're like rolls.
That's the
stuck
idea.
Together.
But
yes.
When I saw that, and I thought that you might like that because you do like sushi. You're going to have to be carrying like a big beer too because you like your sushi and beer.
I think sushi is the best beer food since pizza.
Okay.
You don't put ginger on the fish. It's to clear the palate between pieces, not drown it out. And it is already precisely sauced. Doesn't need a soy bath.
Actually, I think I saw one sitting in a box, and I was going to ask and forgot, but I don't think that, no, I don't
when
think.
When you say ask, do you mean swipe?
Nah, we ain't taking that. Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 104.3 The Score.
Show me the money!
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, 104.3 The Score. Now, in fairness, you weren't going to swipe sushi. I hope that's not misleading.
Yes. Good morning, Mully.
You were talking bobblehead.
Happy Tuesday. I was talking about swiping a bobblehead.
Yes.
I found out yesterday at the rate that would not have been a good idea.
Oh, it was
They're very scarce.
They're on eBay. No.
Cherished, and they're, being auctioned off as we speak.
Right.
But the sushi I can covet, and I will have tonight, and I'll report back tomorrow, unless you'd like me to do it sooner. I might even have one of your beers.
Feel free to let me know immediately if it's any good. Maybe I can then make a trek there. Just that.
Well,
then
you're welcome to come tonight.
Game.
Yankee Sox tonight, yeah. Again, 6:40, I believe, first pitch.
I could actually see the game.
You wouldn't need any power.
No power.
You wouldn't need anything except for your own eyes.
I'm extremely unshaven this morning.
Oh, boy. Scruffy.
I'm so scruffy
Mully.
I feel like I'm...
Oh, my gosh. It's a good thing that you got the coffee, though, right away.
Yeah, that God bless
right away.
Mitch.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you should come out to the rate tonight. Gerrit Cole, Anthony Kay, Sox Yankees. And I did not partake in the sushi last night. Had to kind of get out of there right after the TV. But tonight, I might stick around a little while.
If you had to get out of there, does that mean that they were up 3-0 when you left? Because it didn't work out in the long run.
You know, the Sox started very well against the Yankees, and Noah Schultz for three innings looked like, wow, this is going swimmingly.
They pitched him. They gave him the 5 days. He's all,
maybe not. Yeah, that was indicative of the struggles he's been having. He has not shown to be a guy yet that can go give you a quality start. It's been a while. And last night was another one of those examples. You felt good after three innings. Sox get right off the board. Max Fried, they get to him for three in the first. Got a lead. And then Noah Schultz, again, lost the command that we've talked about.
Mm.
And it leaves you wondering what's next. And
how'd you
handle this little dip?
Don't J-Mo him. If that's what you're driving
at. Is that
a
verb now?
He got J-Mo'd.
Yeah, that's sad.
He could have written. It was Christmas in July at the rate.
It was.
And you just want to make sure they don't Scrooge him.
It was Christmas in July.
That's
a lot,
so
lot
weird.
Going on at the rate. You had the people clamoring and asking questions about the sushi. You had people walking around in Santa Claus hats. And the Yankees were in town. It was eventful.
And the Yankees... more taketh awayeth.
You know, the Yankees are deep because they get news yesterday that Bellinger's out 4-6 with the hammy. They still are playing without Aaron Judge. They don't have Stanton, and it really doesn't matter.
Their pitching is good. The Yankees pitching might be better than we've seen Yankees
pitching. It's good enough to carry them.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
It has been.
And when you have young hitters in that lineup, and you don't think of the Yankees as having young hitters, but Ben Rice, wow, really, very dangerous. And so he's got 73 runs batted in now.
That's a lot.
I know RBIs don't matter, but in an age where they don't, he really does matter in the middle of that lineup, and he has helped them compensate for some of their losses, and he was too much last night. And the Sox, you know, they're in a bit of a rut right now, even though they're in first place. They're not. Will Venable said it last night. When you have a game like that, it was sloppy. It leaves you with a bad feeling.
And the lead diminished. It's two now instead of 2.5.
Guardians got rained out.
They did.
Postponed. So
they got two today, I believe.
I believe so. Could be a big day. Big day on the south side. You said Gerrit Cole. You know what I'm thinking when I see Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, of course you are. Bring up, what did they call him at the Bonemer? They called Bonemer. He was misnamed when introduced
to
the
Bonemer,
Stars game.
That Gerrit Cole went after earlier this year in his single A rehab stint.
At the time, we got reached out to by the dietitian of the Renegades.
Pitched Caleb Bonemer, runs inside and hits him a 97-mile-an-hour fastball.
That's your guy, Gerrit Cole. So Caleb Bonemer homered against him,
yeah.
And his next time up, he tasted a little pitch. Here's what you get for homering against me in a rehab start.
How petty.
I mean, Tom Petty, for God's sake. It's just ridiculous.
But how do you retaliate tonight? The only way you can is to attack, because you can't. He doesn't bat. You can't buzz the tower. You can't do anything except for knock him out of the game.
I think you could give him a series of dirty looks. So is the entire time he feels
declare.
He feels shame. Why are they staring at me? Oh, it's probably because I hit that kid in the minors.
In all honesty, the Sox have more important things to worry about.
I know. I wasn't.
They do by now. I'm sorry.
You brought it up.
I know. I did bring it
and
up.
And now you're telling me don't get petty.
No, I'm not. You
That's
can be as petty as you wish. I did bring it up. I think it's a thing. I don't like Gerrit Cole now.
I know.
I don't know that I had an opinion on him before, except for thinking he was a bit of a hothead. I don't like him now.
No, I haven't liked him since that happened. I just thought it was classless.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not about class. It's about winning.
And the Sox had a chance last night. I feel bad for Noah Schultz. There was a lot of hoopla around his debut. And back when he made it, the Sox were about development, and it was about, this is going to be fun to see his ups and downs, and he's going to spend his rookie season in the majors and not have to go back down. And now I think that you have to have a hard conversation.
Really? You're going to demote him?
I don't know, but I think it's on the table. It depends on what you do at the deadline.
This Chamo thing has ruined you. Now you're just, I mean, what happens if Shota gives up a solo homer? Get out!
Okay.
Solo homer, what?
I think the criteria used to make decisions is different when it comes to Jameson Taillon and the Cubs and Noah Schultz and the Sox.
I totally agree with that.
Now, you can have more patience with Noah Schultz. And I frankly, if he could come out of the bullpen, I would welcome that, I think, as an alternative.
It's hard to imagine that when a guy's struggling with the strikes.
Yeah, because you don't want him to come in and walk two batters.
Right.
And he's not used to coming out of the bullpen. I think sometimes we make too much of that, but with a young pitcher, you can't take it for granted.
Yeah.
Now, with the Cubs, Jameson Taillon is something that when Bruce talked in the way that he did on Monday morning with us, you knew something was in the offing.
Bruce suggested that he would retire before they DFA'd him.
Well, I think that...
Wasn't that the suggestion?
I think, I don't know if he put it in those terms, but I think that he gave us an idea that the end was near.
Well, I think we all knew the end was near because we watched that game and then we heard Craig Counsell after it. Craig Counsell pretty much said, well, you can't, well, like, let's listen.
Essentially, we just had to, we had to make a hard decision as to whether, you know, we thought Jameson was going to pitch again. And, you know, with where we're at in the season and with what's going on in his season, we just didn't feel like it was going to happen again. So, you know, those are hard decisions. And, you know, it seems like everything is always just a baseball decision and just about production. I think J-Mo's not only produced as a Cub, he has been he's a big impact on our culture and on our clubhouse. And so that makes those decisions harder. But you know, in the end, you just feel like we had to do better in that spot, and thus the decision.
Jameson Taillon is among the easiest guys in that Cub clubhouse to root for.
He's a good dude.
Yeah.
He always takes responsibility if something goes awry. It's been a series of missteps. It's gotten to a point where, number one, his health was in question, but really mainly he's given up the second most bombs in the league outside of someone in Oakland where they're playing in a minor league stadium.
Right.
Right.
For a team that is serious about contending,
yes,
this truly wasn't that difficult of a baseball decision. What made it harder was the quality of a teammate that he became, or he is.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about a guy that is a cancer survivor,
yes,
the consummate teammate, and somebody who is always accountable. So that made it difficult.
But Craig said after he pitched that night, basically that they had...
You saw it coming.
Oh, it was coming. It was shocking because of who he is and his status and what he did last year and all of that stuff kind of wrapped up in a bow. But the reality is that he wasn't going to help them. And that was their conclusion. And his contract ends after this season. So they have to move on and try something else.
And among those experiments or the trial and error phase of this season, which they've gone into because of injury, David Peterson pitched well again last night.
Yes.
That's
3 out of 4?
Yes. He had the clunker that was really bad.
He had one clunker.
But last night, 5 2/3, he did give up a homer, but only 2 earned runs, and he kept them – he gave them a sense of confidence when he went to the mound, and he has done that.
Yep.
That's a good, sneaky good move. It
was a good move.
So Jed Hoyer is off to a pretty good start with a week to go, less than a week now, to the trade deadline. That is still a spot in the rotation, Jameson Taillon's, that likely will be filled by a pitcher to be named later. Assad will get the first crack at it.
Well, I mean, probably they need a starter. Could Aaron Civale get a shot at anything? I'm not suggesting.
Possibly.
I'm just saying. Who knows?
Possibly. I don't know that I would like that idea.
I wouldn't
feel very good about the Cubs going into August with Civale in your rotation.
You feel good with Assad?
Better with Assad. Mm. I would prefer Assad to Civale.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably accurate.
But
I would prefer a new pitcher.
Definitely.
And that's nice to get that done.
That's option A, B, and C.
Yes.
And D, all the above. So new pitcher.
Cabrera's coming back.
Mid-August. It's July 28th. Mid-August. He is on his way back, though.
He will be.
That's good. Friday.
He'll start his rehab Friday.
Yeah.
3 starts.
That's what
Council said needs 3 rehabs. I mean, that seems like it's the time of year. I get one. But, I mean, if one goes well, what are we doing?
Well, I think you want to see how he bounces back from one. So I get if it's 2. 3 does seem like it might be one more than I would probably expect. But pitchers are delicate flowers.
They really are.
You need to see how they bounce back. You need to see how they have command.
That's baffling to me. I get the one. If he doesn't come out of it, okay.
You'd only give him one start? You wouldn't even have a start and then see how he does the next day.
Of course you have to see how he wakes up the next day, obviously.
I'd give him 2 and bring him back.
I'm sorry for being obvious.
I'd give him 2.
2 seems like a minimum.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's different with hitters. That's why I do commend the White Sox for the way they handled Mune. Because as he got back to regained his timing, he didn't do it at AAA. He did it at the major league level.
Yeah, I would commend them if yesterday had gone better. But was yesterday, I'd commend them. Because Sunday went very well. He did fine.
Yes.
He had a single.
Right.
I'm not dissing Mune in any way. I'm just saying right now.
But what I said was unrelated to the outcome. It was the approach.
Oh, that's all I care about.
I know, but the approach in that, what Dustin's alluding to, is like, if you're going to have rehab at bats or innings pitched, we all prefer them to be at the major league level.
All your bullets should be fired at the major league level.
Yes.
But I think with pitching, you have to see how a guy recovers.
Yeah, that's all.
But yeah, I mean, two is probably a minimum, but three, apparently, according to...
They want to be careful.
That might be a maximum.
They might be careful.
And so does that mean they're not going for the division? They're just trying to keep themselves firmly in place
quite
as the opposite. Wild card team?
Quite the opposite. I think that when you look at the big picture and you zoom out, you could make the argument that they're being very deliberate with Edward Cabrera to make sure that he is healthy in late September into October, and they want to remove all doubt. And so that's a team with ambition, and that's the way they're handling this.
Well, I mean, I'm not arguing whether or not they're a team with ambition, but I would say we shall see.
We shall see.
Because it's the six-day countdown to ambition in a lot of ways, right?
I agree. Keep the heat on.
Yes.
Let's keep the foot on the pedal.
Yep.
Because however you want to describe it, it's a big deadline for Jed Hoyer, who last year at this time, I think in retrospect, did not do enough to put his team in the best position to win in October.
I mean, let's be honest about it. They ran out of pitching last year because Shota ran out of gas, and Cade Horton ran out of health. So you were
I hate when that happens.
Short a couple of pitchers. Thank
you
God for J-Mo.
You were definitely short.
So
Mike
Soroka, second inning that he was a Cub.
Yes.
Lost to injury.
That's right.
It wasn't the best moment for Jed Hoyer last year at this time or at the trade deadline. Now he, a year later, has an opportunity to make amends. And that's...
Dream bigger.
Yes. You're swing for looking, the fences.
You know, last year you were still looking to replace Justin Steele. This year you're looking still to replace Cade Horton. And you could argue, well, Ben Brown did very well. Well, you got to replace him.
You got to replace him too. He was injured.
Yeah.
So I think all of the scenarios, the Scoobles, the Robbie Rays, the Sandy Alcantaras, the Freddie Peraltas, those are still in play. They have to be. You have to be considering all of those possibilities if you're the Cubs and Hoyer. And I think that they will, especially now that they have opened up a slot in that rotation by making an easy baseball decision, but a tough one for the organization because of what Jameson Taillon meant to everyone.
I'm shocked by that move. I'm shocked. I can't believe they didn't find a calf or a wrist or a forearm. And that's what makes me the cynist in me. You know, I'm always thinking about something doesn't seem right. I mean, Bruce mentioned to you guys that he might tell them I'm done. And did they do him a favor by like DFAing him? So they got to pay him. They DFA him. They got to pay him. Mm-hmm. If he quits, air quotes, maybe they don't have to pay him. They could pay him, but they wouldn't have pay him. Could he have quit? You know, could he have told them after the game, I'm done?
You know, look.
Because they need arms. I mean, sit him down for a month and see what happens. I'm shocked.
I thought that they could create some concern and then just work with him to try to get him able to contribute in some fashion.
I thought so too because of how valuable he was last September.
That's right.
Because when you look a year ago, he had a similar problem with the home run ball a year ago, but in September it got better. And then he had a couple big moments in the playoffs.
Oh, he did.
So that experience, I thought, might be valued more than DFAing him suggests.
The old horse gets a sniff of the finish line, and maybe something comes out. Right?
And that makes you wonder, and I will talk about this at the pick six, but it makes you wonder if there's a team out there that believes they can help him fix what's wrong and maybe catch lightning in a bottle in the stretch run and claims him.
Well,
possibly.
then you'll know that the Cubs DFA'd him, right? But if he doesn't get picked up, I don't know that he might not have said, I'm pulling the plug.
Dustin, they DFA'd him, right?
I understand. I read the same thing you did.
So they did make the move, but you're saying that
he might have made it for them, and they did that like out of respect.
Hmm. Well, nonetheless, pressure's on Jed Hoyer. Cubs win a big game in St. Louis, and tonight, Colin Ray goes to the mound for them. And I think he's a guy that you wonder how he fits in the next iteration of the post-trade deadline rotation.
But he's a guy that has done all sorts of things.
He could do, he's versatile.
It wouldn't be difficult for him to move back to the bullpen if that's indeed what they want to do with him. But you can't move. You can't DFA everyone.
Well, he's in no danger of being DFA'd.
No, he's not.
No, he just might play a different role.
Yes,
that's
conceivable.
That could be as soon as next week, depending on who they acquire and how many pitchers they get at the deadline.
Well, now you're talking. It's a numbers game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As much as anything else.
And I think when you look at the job David Peterson did last night and how good he has been for the most part since coming over, that's a good start.
You know, again,
to revamping this rotation,
we go back
out
to
of necessity.
We go back to the same stuff we're talking about. There's a guy who's a ground ball pitcher who's got now. He goes from one of the worst defenses in baseball to the best. He's a different cat. He's doing a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
When he was getting the ball up in the air, that was a major issue. So as long as he continues to be a ground ball pitcher, he can be successful. Now, you got to ask yourself whether that works come playoff time.
You got to wonder that.
You do wonder that. Something you think about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they need help. There's no shadow of a doubt. They're short one or two.
I could see them adding two pitchers at the deadline.
Two starters.
Yeah, I could see them trying to, and one may not be a guy that is an obvious top of the rotation guy, but I think that, and that would be of lesser concern, but I do think you need a top of the rotation guy. You need to swing big for the fences, Jed, and go out and get a guy that is going to, you can envision starting game one or two of the playoffs. I think Matthew Boyd has cemented himself so far, it's still a lot of season left, as the ace of this staff. They've won 10 straight starts of his.
Right.
So if he's your game one starter in a series, if you're hosting the wild card again, then who's starting game two? That's the guy you trade for. The guy that could go for one or two.
Couldn't Shota be that? I mean, I know you're not happy with him, but he's been pretty good the last couple
of times. Let's ask that same question in a month.
Okay, that's fair.
And then we'll see. I'm encouraged. Who couldn't be by the numbers? But you just wonder if that bugaboo, that early home run that he has a tendency to give up if he's not sharp, will resurface down the stretch. I hope not. I hope he's clutch. Shota could conceivably be your game one or two starter in a playoff series, yes.
Be interesting to see how it goes. I mean, again, we're in the week of the trade deadline, so this is going to be a really good week. It should be hearing all sorts of rumors.
All those kinds of rumors.
Yes.
Both sides of town.
Both sides of town.
You know, the Sox are involved in some interesting conversations reportedly, too. So.
Both the Cubs and the Sox after Reed Detmers. Did you see that?
Yes. Reed Detmers and maybe Soriano out there as well.
Yeah, I thought Detmers decided that they weren't both looking at the same pitchers, but I think maybe the pitching isn't as strong as you were hoping.
No, there's a lot of starting pitchers who've been rumored to be going places.
Yes.
And Detmers is the guy that kind of has been mentioned in both sides of town.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it's bear season today. Football's back.
Yeah, we'll have a news conference, I believe, 12:30. Is that
right? 12:30, House Hall.
That's good stuff.
Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles.
Hear from the great architect of the team and the general manager. Oh, stop it.
Well, that's well put.
Come on. All right. We got the pick six next. We're going to get right to it. Mully and Haw, 104.3, the score.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was your reaction to the Cubs DFAing Jameson Taillon? Do you expect anybody to claim Taillon or the Cubs to work out a trade? How conceivable is it that he'd accept an assignment to the Iowa Cubs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do not look at this as sort of the normal way to go through it. I was very surprised. And we had talked about it, and we had gone over it. It was just when it finally happened, it was like, wow, like they've just given up on him. And would someone take a player like that? Would someone take a chance? He struggled quite a bit. I don't know that at this time of year there is a team out there that is going to be patient and do like a look-see, because he's at the end. I mean, this, you know, he would have to. I think we've seen the last of J-Mo, frankly.
I agree. I think we've seen the last of Jameson Taillon, and I was shocked at the way it went down yesterday.
Big surprise that the finality arrived as quickly and abruptly as it seemed. But I think we should have been prepared. We talked to Bruce in the morning, and he introduced the idea of him retiring, which I thought was surprising. But I think from the standpoint of a baseball decision, this was not a hard one for the Cubs to make. It was made more difficult because of, as we said, the teammate that he is and the kind of person that he always has been as a Cub, and what he brought to the clubhouse, what he brought to the organization, what he brought to Chicago. He was a good Cub. Now, he had the big contract, and certainly it wasn't as big as some have signed and not, you know, met expectations. Overall, though, he had some good moments, and they were last year.
Yeah.
So he's not that far removed from having some of those good moments. He does look like a pitcher who might be done. 25 homers in 76 innings tell you that. Now, could somebody out there? We know there are baseball saviors in every front office, in every dugout. You wonder if they see Jameson Taillon or maybe a link to his past, and they say, we can fix that. You need to do this mechanical change. It's hard to imagine the Cubs missing something about Jameson Taillon and not trying that, but you never know. I think I might be surprised, or I will raise an eyebrow if he just walks away and retires as a result of this. Look, Dallas Keuchel just signed a minor league contract with the A's. You look around baseball, there are guys still hanging on looking for one more shot. So I wouldn't be shocked if Jameson Taillon is hanging around looking for one more shot.
Well, those are two different questions.
Bruce Levine, he joins Mully and Haw at 7:25 this morning. What did you make of Noah Schultz last night? Was he a different guy on his normal rest? How about the offense getting three runs in the first, and did that help Schultz out?
One would think 3-0, Noah Schultz on the mound, Yankees in town. You survive the bad weather. You get out there, and you're feeling good, feeling very good. And Noah Schultz looked pretty decent in the first few innings. And then came the fourth, and he just did what he has done too often lately. And command was lacking. Yankees got to him, couldn't make the big pitch. The wipeout pitch is something missing from his arsenal right now, and you don't know what is a result of. You don't know if would be better out of the bullpen, but there are too many things you don't know when he takes the mound. And that, to me, is a problem for a team that has to be cognizant of the standings and is in it to win it. This is one of those years in the American League where the Sox are a huge surprise. I think Chuck Garfine told me yesterday that a year ago, through this many games, the Sox were 50 games under 500. That's a huge turnaround. They're in first place. When you're in first place, you make decisions differently. And I think the Sox have a tough decision to make about Noah Schultz. They've got to go into the deadline prepared to deal and acquire and to get somebody likely to replace him in the rotation. I would be surprised if the Sox can rely on him in the rotation down the stretch and still be a team that holds on to first place, because I don't feel confidence every fifth day that he pitches. That sounds like it's losing confidence in a young prospect. Doesn't mean it has to have this course of his career changed, but things aren't going very well and he needs to adjust.
Yeah, I mean, they pulled him because he walked the first two batters he faced in the fourth. I guess my biggest question, I understand why they pulled him. You got a playoff atmosphere over at the Rate last night. You jump out to that lead. You're trying to hang on to that lead. My question is, and again, I am not the, you know, diehard White Sox fan or interpreter of their team, but I'm curious, like, was Chris Murphy the best option? Like, so you made that move and you brought in Murphy because he's a lefty. Like, I preserve the win, but like, if that was a high leverage situation. Things were amped up over at the Rate. You would walk two guys, you got a ground out that scored a run, and then you pull the starter and you go to this guy. Okay, go to the bullpen, but in my opinion, I would have went with one of my higher leverage guys at that point to get out of that inning. And then the very first batter that he faces, Chisholm, puts one right between the right fielder and the center fielder, and all of a sudden the game's tied. So you did that, and you show the young guy, well, we don't have any faith in you. And we went to the bullpen, and the bullpen gave up the lead immediately.
Yeah, you know, I think that it was one of those games where you look at it, and he had three good innings, but he was getting some strikeouts on 3-2 counts. He was borderline being challenged, and then, as you say, Dustin, when he comes out for the fourth and immediately walks a couple of guys, there's no earthly good that's going to come from that. And unfortunately, he lasted 3 1/3, and then you know, the runs are coming in. So it is difficult to kind of figure out, to pinpoint exactly where he went awry, because it could have happened earlier. Because he'd gotten through three innings, you felt good about it. But then when you walk guys, there's not much that you can say, especially a team like the Yankees, which, you know, they're missing some really essential parts, and it doesn't seem to matter.
The three best hitters are gone.
It's incredible that doesn't impact them more. But it was a tough one, and you know, he's 22 years old. I mean, you know, you've got to be patient. You've got to figure some things out. You've got to help him. But this is kind of more or less what we anticipated was going to happen for him this year. They were going to give him an opportunity. They were going to use him as much as they can. It just feels like they've reached a point where you can't afford to do that much more. And he's also reached a point where he's going to be hitting a career high in innings pitched. So I don't know what the future will hold for him. But I like him, and I want good things to happen to a local guy made good.
That's another really good question.
Right now, Mune Murakami, second best odds to win the AL Rookie of the Year behind the Tigers shortstop Kevin McGonigal. How realistic of a goal should it be for Mune, and what numbers will he have to reach, or what has to happen in order for him to be the AL Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I think you know, he probably needs to get back to hitting home runs, and he hit a couple on Sunday, and that was great to see. But I would say, where is he now? 23 homers? 22? I think he probably needs 36 to tie Abreu for the rookie lead of White Sox power hitters. And I think if he gets to 35, 36, I think he gets the Rookie of the Year award. I think that would be pretty extraordinary. And if he leads his team to the playoffs, I mean, the Detroit has been in the playoffs for a couple of years and done nothing, and that's why I believe they really should trade Skubal before they get to the deadline. You look at them and you wonder, Okay, if they keep Scooble, are they going to make noise come playoff time? I don't believe so. So I think that they may have to trade him in the next 5 days. And
you're encouraging them to trade him because
I am.
It's World Series or bust.
That's I don't you believe that's the
case?
Well,
I think that's good. That's good logic. I could see that.
And therefore, I think I wouldn't be so quick to reward their rookie. Good player.
Now I'm going to stay in my lane, and this is not breaking news if you've listened to this show over the years. Mune Murakami is not a rookie. He has played 8 years of professional baseball. He's played over 1,000 games in Japan. 1,000. The McGonaghy has played 103 games of Major League Baseball. So, but to Mully's point, if the Sox win this division and if he gets to close to 40 home runs, he's going to be right there, and he might win it, but I don't think he should be eligible to be the rookie of the year. Very good player, very happy. Hope the White Sox sign him long term. He's not a rookie.
There's not enough time left in this show for me to point out the reasons why that is such a wrong statement. Because it is.
Let's you just asked that. This question and it you is. Knew I was going to answer that way.
I did not really think of it when I posed this question. I was looking at it more like the way that this is going to separate the two. Mully's exactly right. The Tigers are going to head south at some point. They're going to unload Scooble because it is World Series or bust there. Because if they don't win the World Series, how can they justify getting to the postseason and letting him walk for nothing? So I do think the longer this goes on, the more I'm convinced that they're going to deal him, which is exciting from a Cub perspective, perhaps. But the point in this question is Kevin McGonigal, great player, all-star shortstop, but he's going to be on a last-place team potentially. Mune Murakami is going to have 35 homers, around 80 runs batted in, great OPS on a first-place team. That is the surprise of the American League.
That he single-handedly turned around.
That
early.
He really did.
Yeah.
His presence made everyone else relax. His presence was the focal point of this team early on. His work is beyond the numbers. His value is to be determined later by a contract to be signed later. And his worth to them is hard to measure. And his rookie status is hard to argue based on the rules that have existed forever. So yes, he is a rookie. And I do believe he can be rookie of the year. 35 homers, 80 runs batted in, and a playoff appearance.
Boy, that's a hell of a question.
Oh, Mike Florio, 9 o'clock. There'll be some questions for him. In Up and Adams with Kay Adams, Caleb Williams promised.
It's going to be really exciting. It's going to be really fun to watch. It's going to be more entertaining than last year. Hopefully not as much as a heart race, but it's going to be a little bit more entertaining throughout the whole game and what we're going to bring to the table.
So what would that look like? And do you expect the Bears to be one of the top 3, 5, or 10 most entertaining offenses in the NFL?
Is that where we are now? That seems fun to consider, that the Bears are going to have one of the most entertaining offenses in the NFL. You think of the Rams, you think of the Chiefs, because Mahomes is going to be back and interesting. There are other teams out there, obviously the Lions, or do you think of the Lions anymore? When you think about entertaining offensive football teams, Ben Johnson calling the plays, Caleb Williams taking the snaps, that definitely is one of the top 3 offenses in football, potentially. I don't believe I'm saying that, but I think I'm saying that. I don't know who they're going to emerge or use as the number one wide receiver yet, but I think that they could be fun to watch and score a bunch of points. I think they're going to need to with that defense. But I like the way that he is talking about this. I think entertaining in the end would be if they win 12 games. That's the most entertaining, however they get there. But I do believe that he's making me look at the... I mean, just to hear him talk in those terms, it's been a long time since the Bears have had one of the top 5 offenses in football. But I think they have one of the top 5 offenses in football.
You know what's entertaining to me? Winning games and getting to sing that song. you know, and let's hope it's the pride and joy of Illinois longer than not. But that's a whole nother story. It sounds to me, if he's telling the truth, that they're going to get away from the run a little bit, and they're going to put the ball up in the air a little bit more, and they're going to get, you know, four or five guys with five plus catches a game. That's what that sounds like. Now, Ben Johnson runs the ball even more than I thought that he would. But to David's point, I think he did that to help protect a defense that we all still have a lot of questions about going into the start of training camp today. And, you know, will Ben and will the general manager get asked about that defense? I'm entertained by W's. And they, you know, if people want to say that W's don't matter in baseball, well, they matter in the NFL. Okay. Every game is a big deal. I think they're a top 10 offense, but Caleb needs to improve on his completion percentage in order for them to be a top 10 offense. So forget about being more entertaining. Complete the ball more and win. Keep winning games.
For context, 6th overall last year total yards, 9th in scoring offense.
Yeah, I think what he's saying, and I'll be more cautious than you were. I think they could be a top 3 offense. I'll go top 5. Just because if they're a top 5 offense in this league, that is pretty good. There are some really good teams that are capable of doing some entertaining things on offense. I think what he's saying is that they're going to take more shots down the field. I think what he's talking about is that they're going to be having big scoring plays. I think they're going to run the ball the same way. I think that he is – what they want from him is to basically complete more passes, play better early in games, and not leave it to the dramatic finish. And that's kind of what he's saying,
right,
that they're going to be good throughout the game. But I think that – he has a feel for the offense. He has a feel for the play caller. And I think he looks at the playbook and the stuff that they're talking about, and he sees a world of possibility, because I think that's how Ben Johnson is. I think he's really good at what he does. And I also think he's like an independent thinker, and he's a man of his own offense. I love the idea that he is a guy that is not borrowing from anyone else, but may see something and include it in the way he's attacking.
He's not a branch on a tree.
No, he is a tree unto himself, and I think that we're going to see some big plays coming out of it, maybe especially with the tight ends. But I think that he will incorporate anything that he has seen, and I think Caleb, he's talking with great confidence there, like he knows it's going to work. And that's a wonderful thing to hear.
It's exciting.
It really is. Great stuff from him. All right, we've got to take a quick time out. We will do so and be right back with the Pick 6. Mully and Haw, 104.3, The Score.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
This segment of the program brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Confidence, it should never cost a fortune.
Welcome back to Pick 6 with Mully and Haw on 104.3 The Score and the Odyssey and iHeartRadio app.
I have not asked him that specific question.
Well, what do you make of the news that the righty Edward Cabrera will begin his rehab assignment from a hamstring injury Friday at AAA Iowa? The skipper, Craig Counsell, who you just heard there, said Cabrera is likely to need 3 rehab starts. We anticipate him back in mid-August.
I got to tell you, that's really good news. The thing you worry about with a hamstring is obviously how long that takes. He's been out a while.
I mean,
it's
but it looked bad.
But when he left, he was had to be helped off, and it looked awful. So you just want him back on the bump, going through the motions. I find the three starts thing rather arbitrary. You know, I think that you want him back as soon as you can get him back, but that bothers me a little bit. The idea that it's going to take three, two won't cut it. If he's doing well, let's see if he can get through the third one. I don't know, man. It makes me wonder if there is a real fear of a setback somehow, just because it's a hamstring.
The hamstring might be the reason. If you're listening earlier this morning in the 5:30 to 6 portion of the program, I think threes sounds ridiculous to me. The Cubs are in a position to try to take the division from the Brewers and stay in that top spot for the wild card. Of course, he has to have one. Of course, you need to see how he does after a day or two of that start. But if he comes out of that start healthy, why not make be three innings at home or on the road again, you know, line it up so it's against the team that you feel pretty good with him against, and have him throw those pitches at the big league level in start number two, assuming he comes out of game number one just fine.
I think with hamstring injuries, you do have to be careful, and I don't think we're talking about a young pitcher who you're trying to conserve innings or pitches necessarily. You're talking about a veteran who is a workhorse, and if he's healthy, he's a guy that you're going to rely on to make a run in September and to be relied upon in October. I think it's a little bit different equation and perception and approach when you're talking about a veteran and a young pitcher. If it were a young pitcher that had so many innings left and you were looking at a count like Cade Horton last year, or you know, insert whatever example you want, I would think that you would want to use every inning at the major league level if he were ready. To me, this Edward Cabrera slow play back to the majors and to the Cubs is taking the long view of this season, which is consistent with the way the Cubs have done everything this year, because they've had to. I got a kick out of listening to Craig Counsell talk about, he's either before or after the game last night, about this being a long 162-game season and you can't hide things because your record will become how good you are. The Cubs are a pretty good team. I don't know if they're great yet. I don't know if they can be, but I think they have aspirations and ambitions to go deep into October, and gradually bringing Edward Cabrera back to the major league team is part of that process, and I think it does make sense. So 3-2, it doesn't matter. You don't want to rush him back, and when he gets back, it will be a bonus.
The last question will be...
That's the voice of Stacey Dale. She'll be taking Bears NFL questions from Mully and Haw 8:25 this morning. What did you make of Patrick Kane telling the Pardon My Take podcast that he's been talking to Jonathan Toews about a reunion tour with the Blackhawks?
Well, yeah. What was he saying? He was like, I'm actually jealous. I'm like, hey, maybe you come back for a year.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Listen. Yeah.
He's like, I'm thinking about it.
What do you think of that?
I think it was Kaner having fun. I did not take it seriously. I don't think that it makes a lot of sense. Jonathan Toews said goodbye in Winnipeg, and it was a classy farewell. He got his final season in his hometown. Everybody in the NHL, every hockey fan, every Blackhawk fan probably was thrilled to see him go out the way he wanted, on his terms. It's rare that you're able to do that. I don't think that's a realistic possibility. And frankly, I'm not sure that I would want that. As much as it's fun to consider, oh, Kaner and Toews, they're back together again, I don't think that you can recapture that, and I don't think it would be. It would be, it's a figment of our imagination, and I don't know that I want that to be the final image of Jonathan Toews in a Blackhawk sweater. So, one-day contract, final skate, if you will, the last shift, however they have done that in a way that's been fun to honor the legends of their of franchise, but I don't think that I want Jonathan Toews on the third line for the Blackhawks next year. No.
I agree with you, David. I was fortunate to have probably seen Jonathan Toews' last real shift as a Jet against the Blackhawks at the United Center this past spring, I guess it was. Yeah. It was a fantastic opportunity. It was great to see it. But he got out there and there wasn't much there. He got a tremendous ovation the first time he hit the ice, richly deserved, obviously. But every time he hit the ice, like I watched his entire shift. We were lucky enough to watch his entire career here as a Blackhawk, and he was awesome. Okay, he was the leader of a team that won 3 Stanley Cups for this franchise in this city. But it's not there anymore. He just doesn't have it anymore. So I hope he does that one-day contract, does that last shift kind of ceremonial thing. But for that, no, I don't want that. I think where he is at professionally as a player versus where Kaner is at professionally as a player are two very different spaces. I mean, I'm wondering if we're going to get to see what I as a fan want, which is Kane and the newly, you know, minted fourth highest player in the league playing on the same line. There's been some tap the brakes on that. You'll see him on the power play together, but you might not see him on the same line. That may not happen from good hockey people saying that might not happen. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see Jonathan Toews playing, as David put it, on the third line and then it ending badly. Like, I don't want to see that. It ended. Like, they have to move on from that.
It's interesting because, poor Jonathan Toews. I mean, he was injured. He was searching to get better, and then he managed to get back into hockey. And you kind of can't help but wonder, did the guy need last year to be able to play better hockey? Or is he kind of finished? Is it over? And it seems like he understood that it was over. And so how do you put this? I love the nostalgia of the idea. You love the idea because they were two young guys that came up and changed the fortunes of the Blackhawks and the city. And it was an unbelievable thing to witness and watch the two of them grow into it. So there's a lot of nostalgia for it.
Yeah.
But I think that Patrick Kane never really, his career has never ended and restarted. He is still doing the same stuff he did. Obviously, he's not as good a player as he once was, but he's still a storied, legendary talent that can help this team. I don't know if you can say the same thing about Jonathan Toews. And so as much as the nostalgia might, you know, tweak you a little bit, oh, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if the two guys? I think you're right. I think you want it to, you don't want to ruin any idea or any image.
You want
to
preserve those memories as they were.
That's exactly
because at this stage of their careers, you know, they're at different places. And, yeah, you know, you look at tandems in Chicago sports history, other than Jordan and Pippen,
yeah,
you're looking at Kane and Toews as the most accomplished tandem. And I think that you want to leave it there because Kaner can still be a valuable part of this team, whatever iteration it is of his career. I do hope that he's with Bedard on most occasions on the same line. But I think that you're right. You know, it is a great idea in terms of like, oh, that's a romantic notion.
Yes.
Just not realistic.
I think when I think of duos, I'm always thinking Caleb and Matas. But that might not be realistic either.
Maybe so. I don't know. You got to ask Ruthie.
Oh,
she got
them
all worked out.
She got them all fired up.
You set her up for that one.
I didn't set her up. All right, we got the extra point next. Sorry, Ruthie. I never intended anyone to be set up with anything. We will be right back with the extra point. It's a fun one. Mully and Haw, 104.3 The Score.
David Hockey.
This segment of the program brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Confidence, it should never cost a fortune.
Welcome back to Pick 6 with Mully and Haw on 104.3 The Score and the Odyssey and iHeartRadio app.
I have not asked him that specific question.
Well, what do you make of the news that the righty Edward Cabrera will begin his rehab assignment from a hamstring injury Friday at AAA Iowa? The skipper, Craig Counsell, who you just heard there, said Cabrera is likely to need 3 rehab starts. We anticipate him back in mid-August.
I got to tell you, that's really good news. The thing you worry about with a hamstring is obviously how long that takes. He's been out a while.
A while.
I mean, it's.
But it looked bad.
But when he left, he was had to be helped off,
yeah.
And it looked awful. So you just want him back on the bump, going through the motions. I find the three starts thing rather arbitrary. You know, I think that you want him back as soon as you can get him back. But that bothers me a little bit. The idea that it's going to take three, two won't cut it. If he's doing well, let's see if he can get through the third one. I don't know, man. It makes me wonder if there is a real fear of a setback somehow just because it's a hamstring.
The hamstring might be the reason, if you're listening earlier this morning in the 5:30 to 6 portion of the program. I think three sounds ridiculous to me. The Cubs are in a position to try to take the division from the Brewers and stay in that top spot for the wild card. Of course, he has to have one. Of course, you need to see how he does after a day or two of that start. But if he comes out of that start healthy, why not make your be three innings at home or on the road, again, you know, line it up so it's against the team that you feel pretty good with him against, and have him throw those pitches at the big league level in start number two, assuming he comes out of game number one just fine.
I think with hamstring injuries, you do have to be careful, and I don't think we're talking about a young pitcher who you're trying to conserve innings or pitches necessarily. You're talking about a veteran who is a workhorse, and if he's healthy, he's a guy that you're going to rely on to make a run in September and to be relied upon in October. I think it's a little bit different equation and perception and approach when you're talking about a veteran and a young pitcher. If it were a young pitcher that had so many innings left and you were looking at a count like Cade Horton last year, or you know, insert whatever example you want, I would think that you would want to use every inning at the major league level if he were ready. To me, this Edward Cabrera slow play back to the majors and to the Cubs is taking the long view of this season, which is consistent with the way the Cubs have done everything this year because they've had to. I got a kick out of listening to Craig Counsell talk about, he's either before or after the game last night, about this being a long 162-game season and you can't hide things because your record will become how good you are. The Cubs are a pretty good team. I don't know if they're great yet. I don't know if they can be, but I think they have aspirations and ambitions to go deep into October, and gradually bringing Edward Cabrera back to the major league team is part of that process, and I think it does make sense. So 3-2, it doesn't matter. You don't want to rush him back, and when he gets back, it will be a bonus.
The last question will be...
That's the voice of Stacey Dale. She'll be taking Bears NFL questions from Mully and Haw 8:25 this morning. What did you make of Patrick Kane telling the Pardon My Take podcast that he's been talking to Jonathan Toews about a reunion tour with the Blackhawks?
Well, yeah. What was he saying? He was like, I'm actually jealous. I'm like, hey, maybe you come back for a year.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Listen, yeah.
He's like, I'm thinking about it. Huh?
What do you think of that?
I think it was Kaner having fun. I did not take it seriously. I don't think that it makes a lot of sense. Jonathan Toews said goodbye in Winnipeg, and it was a classy farewell. He got his final season in his hometown. Everybody in the NHL, every hockey fan, every Blackhawk fan probably was thrilled to see him go out the way he wanted on his terms. It's rare that you're able to do that. I don't think that's a realistic possibility. And frankly, I'm not sure that I would want that. As much as it's fun to consider, oh, Kaner and Toews, they're back together again, I don't think that you can recapture that, and I don't think it would be. It would be, it's a figment of our imagination, and I don't know that I want that to be the final image of Jonathan Toews in a Blackhawk sweater. So, one-day contract, final skate, if you will, the last shift, however they have done that in a way that's been fun to honor the legends of their of franchise, but I don't think that I want Jonathan Toews on the third line for the Blackhawks next year. No.
I agree with you, David. I was fortunate to have probably seen Jonathan Toews' last real shift as a Jet against the Blackhawks at the United Center this past spring, I guess it was. It's a fantastic opportunity. It's great to see it. But he got out there, and there wasn't much there. He got a tremendous ovation the first time he hit the ice, richly deserved, obviously. But every time he hit the ice, like I watched his entire shift. We were lucky enough to watch his entire career here as a Blackhawk, and he was awesome. Okay, he was the leader of a team that won three Stanley Cups for this franchise in this city. But it's not there anymore. He just doesn't have it anymore. So I hope he does that one-day contract, does that last shift kind of ceremonial thing. But for that, no, I don't want that. I think where he is at professionally as a player versus where Kaner is at professionally as a player are two very different spaces. I mean, I'm wondering if we're going to get to see what I as a fan want, which is Kane and the newly, you know, minted fourth highest player in the league playing on the same line. There's been some tap the brakes on that. You'll see him on the power play together, but you might not see him on the same line. That may not happen from good hockey people saying that might not happen. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see Jonathan Toews playing, as David put it, on the third line for, you know, and then it ending badly. Like, I don't want to see that. It ended. Like, they have to move on from that.
It's interesting because, you know, poor Jonathan Toews. I mean, he was injured. He was searching to get better, and then he managed to get back into hockey. And you kind of can't help but wonder, did the guy need last year to be able to play better hockey? Or is he kind of finished? Is it over? And it seems like he understood that it was over. And so he, you know, again, how do you put this? I love the nostalgia of the idea. You love the idea because they were two young guys that came up and changed the fortunes of the Blackhawks and the city. And it was an unbelievable thing to witness and watch the two of them grow into it. So there's a lot of nostalgia for it.
Yeah.
But I think that Patrick Kane never really, his career has never ended and restarted. He is still doing the same stuff he did. Obviously, he's not as good a player as he once was, but he's still a storied, legendary talent that can help this team. I don't know if you can say the same thing about Jonathan Toews. And so as much as the nostalgia might, you know, tweak you a little bit, oh, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if the two guys? I think you're right. I think you want it. You don't want to ruin any idea or any image.
You want to preserve those memories as they were. That's exactly right. Because at this stage of their careers, you know, they're at different places. And, yeah, you know, you look at tandems in Chicago sports history, other than Jordan and Pippen, you're looking at Kane and Toews as the most accomplished tandem. And I think that you want to leave it there because Kaner can still be a valuable part of this team, whatever iteration it is of his career. I do hope that he's with Bedard on most occasions on the same line. But I think that you're right. You know, it is a great idea in terms of like, oh, that's a romantic notion.
Yes.
Just not realistic.
I think when I think of duos, I'm always thinking Caleb and Matas. But that might not be realistic either.
Maybe so. I don't know. You got to ask Ruthie.
Oh,
there
she
we got them all worked out.
She got them all fired up.
You set
up.
Her up for that one.
I didn't set her up. All right, we got the extra point next. Sorry, Ruthie. I never intended anyone to be set up with anything. We will be right back with the extra point. It's a fun one. Mully and Haw, 104.3 The Score.
David Hockey.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.